Hello, thank you for clicking play. If you're passionate about supporting small business, small creators, and are enjoying the podcast, I would love if you considered supporting me and the show via Patreon. You'll find the link in the show notes, where you can join us from as little as £3.50 a month. You'll be supporting the making of the show, enable me to keep the show ad-free, get behind-the-scenes content, blog posts, and lots more. Just click the link in the show notes to find out more. Now, on with the show. Hello and welcome to Independent Thinking, the podcast exploring a new era for the high street. We celebrate those who are doing wonderful, creative things in the most difficult of circumstances. We'll be going behind the scenes of businesses and shops you love, that you look forward to visiting and that add joy to your high street. I'm your host, Alexandra. Welcome along. Hello and welcome along. Well, another interesting week of developments and news in retail, and about retail spaces particularly, really made me reflect on some of the themes that have been covered earlier in the series, and indeed some of the areas we'll be delving into more detail with our guest in today's episode. So this week we saw Asda's owners considering removing grocery space to add nail bars and takeaways as they think about new reasons for us to visit their stores and crucially how they keep us there when we arrive. Marks and Spencer's also having similar thoughts about their flagship store, but not nail bars and takeaways, but thinking about office space. How can they take some of the space already devoted to retail and switch it on its head? They're focusing on emerging stronger, that's their words, out of the pandemic. It's part of their Never the Same Again programme, which has so much drama to that title, but you can't argue with it. We are never going to be the same again. Our high streets are going to be reshaped. Our working lives are going to be very different. There's a lot within that. So it's really interesting that they put that front and centre. John Lewis are also having similar thoughts about how they adapt some of their floor space to co-working space or even residential areas in store. So as we've touched upon in previous episodes, lots of discussion, lots of change happening around this area. And I think it's important at this juncture to really zoom out and gain a bit of perspective of what's happening in more depth, what's happened so far, thinking about understanding that, what caused some of the things we're seeing, looking at the trends we can expect to emerge, and think about what our high streets could look like in future. And who better to do this than Dr. Sarah Montano, Senior Lecturer in Marketing at University of Birmingham, who's written extensively around this area. In a recent piece, she proposes that to emerge successfully in 2021, the UK high street needs to focus on blending physical and digital, or digital spaces, increase consumer confidence, government investment, and for governments to truly understand how we as consumers live, what we need. We unpack this and lots more in today's fascinating episode. Enjoy. Thank you so much for joining us, Sarah. That is so lovely. Birmingham calling to Edinburgh, which is wonderful. So.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, thank you. So I think what we've heard from earlier in the series is we've been talking to a lot of independent retailers, and we've been looking actually at community ownership and new trends kind of emerging and movements happening online. And so I wanted to speak to you as an academic working in this field to give us a bit of context. So I wonder if we could just start by looking at what is actually happening. First of all, again, what are the trends that were happening pre-COVID?
Yeah.
And what are the key things that are, yeah, why we are where we are on the high street right now?
Yeah, interesting question. How have we got to where we are? Yeah. I think, well, I mean, yeah, if we want to work out how we got to where we are, we kind of need to dial back sort of like a couple of hundred years, kind of. 1850 is kind of the key watershed date in the development of kind of what we would call modern retailing. So that's when we see the likes of Le Bon Marché open. Obviously, John Lewis comes a little bit later on. Obviously, Selfridges, sort of the early 1900s. So that's sort of when there's a big shift for something that retail is not predominantly functional, but we start to see this idea of retail being something that that's more of an experience. Oh, and then that obviously builds through the 20th century. And then, you know, 1980s, we start to see super malls and kind of things like that, where retail is a destination. It's some, you know, it's somewhere that you go for a day out. And the super malls have experiences attached. So, you know, whether they've got like theme parks or they've got cinemas or casinos, spas, you know, all types of things. And then obviously we get online retailing then comes in.
When did we start to see that really take off with a kind of, was that considerably so? Would that be in the last sort of 15 years, think it's really?
It sort of starts just sort of predates sort of just the year 2000. That's when you see the very early, the real innovators sort of starting. But it really picks up in your mid kind of 2000s. That's when it kind of really, really picks up. And then obviously today we have something what we call the omni-channel retailing, which is whereby, you know, consumers are seeking to be on an app. So they want to be on the retailer's app. They want to be able to order. They want to be able to do things like look at, you know, if I'm buying a jumper, what's my jumper made of? They want to find product information, but also being in store as well. And the expectation is there would be seamless movement between the app, seamless movement between online platform and also in store. And what we're really seeing is stores pre-COVID had become sort of highly experiential. So if we look at something like the brand new Primark building in Birmingham, which only opened a couple of years ago, there's things like, you know, there's a hair salon, there's a nail bar, Disney. Oh, it's amazing. There's a Disney cafe. There's other little cafes dotted around. There's barbers. And there's also kind of like a social media kind of wall as well. And great places for people to rest, the kind of sofas with obviously charging points because you don't want your phone to run down. So things were kind of really sort of experiential, because that's the reason to go to the store for the experience, because now online has become, you know, really quite easy. And then of course we get COVID hit. And that obviously moves a lot of people, you know, particularly the people who weren't keen on online shopping. So, you know, things like, you know, having to shield and things like that meant that perhaps if you hadn't done online shopping before, suddenly by necessity, you had to move to that platform. And then, of course, a lot of people have discovered different brands. They've discovered different retailers. They've discovered a different way to shop. So we can see from the ONS data that, you know, there's obviously been this kind of surge to online. But it is quite interesting. Again, if we look at on ONS data, when retailers open, we do see a drop in the online. And then as retailers close again, and it's picked up. And one of the things I have found quite interesting is COVID is that governments have made this decision between what they deem to be essential retail and essential products and non-essential retail and non-essential products. And I think that is quite an interesting development because we've never really had that before, you know, to be told as a consumer what you desire is not essential. And I think what was interesting, if you read what was non-essential, I was reading it going, well, it kind of feels essential to me. Bed linen, books, birthday cards, actually they feel quite essential to me. I think that's interesting.
Because how decided that? Was it working with retailers? I'm guessing not, in terms of drawing up the lists of who sat where.
I haven't got access to that information, so I don't know. But I did read it, you know, as it came up. So things like, so, you know, obviously the different governments have had slightly different approaches, haven't they? So I think, you know, Wales have been particularly strict in the essential and non-essential retail. In England, it's more being, if your store is open, then you've been deemed to be essential, so therefore you could sell it. But if your store is not open, then you've deemed to be non-essential.
I see,
I think a lot depends on your perceptions of essentials and and non-essentials. So that's sort of where we are. And obviously it will be interesting to see where do we go from here.
Yeah, it was really interesting there when you said that, so when the shops reopened, there was a sort of, people went back So I suppose that then we see a drop in online sales. So are you saying that we're shopping online? Obviously it's through necessity at the moment, but actually we don't get the sense of enjoyment that we lose so much from not being in our physical spaces that we crave.
Yeah, I think so. So, see, it's, I mean, it's interesting. Say, looking at the ONS data, I mean, it certainly hasn't gone back to pre-COVID levels. Yeah, yeah. Certainly not. And I don't, I don't think it will ever go back to that. Yeah. But I think what it's thinking about what retail is about. So often we have this perceptions of, you know, shopping is frivolous, and that, you know, it's like, you know, what, why do we live in a kind of consumer society? Mm-hmm. So often there is a kind of sort of like inherent bias as to why we might be doing that. But I think it's helpful that we step back and we try and sort of broader our sort of understanding of what we're doing. So I think I think part of it is the physicality of shopping. Actually, it's quite nice to walk around the shops, you know, it's a bit of exercise, isn't it? It's quite nice. The online is great, but I think you tend to find when you're online you start to search for quite specific things, don't you?
Yes.
Whereas in store you walk across, and obviously retailers will build their store layouts to maximize the possibility of me stumbling across them. Yeah. Oh, actually, yes, I would like a vanilla candle. Thank you very much. I had no idea I wanted a vanilla candle, but clearly I do want a vanilla candle today when I'd come in for a jumper or whatever. So, you find out, you know, new things. But I think, you know, perhaps the most important one is that, you know, we use retail to socialize. So, you might meet your mum, you go shopping, then you go and have a coffee, and then, you know, you might, you know, finish up in all bar one and then come home. And my daughter, she had an insect day yesterday. So we had an imaginary trip out, so because we can't have one. So we were sat outside, we've been for a little walk, we were sat outside. I said, right, we can't do anything. Let's have an imaginary trip out. Right, where are we going? And she's like, so we're going into the centre of Birmingham. Right, what are we doing? She says, well, we're definitely going to the cinema. I said, what are we seeing? So we're going to see the new Pixar film. So this is all imaginary. And where else are we going? She said, we're going to go to Hotel Chocolat, and we're going to buy some chocolates. Nice. We're going to have a drink, because their chocolate, oh, their coffees and chocolates are just amazing.
Gorgeous,
and obviously calorie-free completely. I'm sure they advertise them as being calorie-free. So we're going to go there, and she says, we're going to go to Primark and buy a couple of things, and definitely a trip to the bookstore. So we both love reading. So that's what I thought. Actually, that's also, I was like, oh, I put my academic head on and went, okay, well, that sort of exemplifies sort of what retail is about. It's not about product acquisition, but that's an experience. It's spending time together. Mm. And that's what we do. So, you know, retail is much more than just getting a product. And of course, you know, as we, you know, well, I think our worlds have become quite small this year. Yeah, it's an important part of the high street is around communities, you know, the cafe where people know what your favorite drink is, you know, the bookshop that you go into where you get great advice because they know who you are and they know the types of books that you're going to read. You know, we go into the clothing store, and again the same sort of recommendations, and that's you know, that's part of our communities.
All these connections that were these sort of on the outskirts of our lives sometimes, of just these people that touch our lives every now and again. It could be every, I was just thinking there this morning, Friday, that I will treat myself to a cinnamon bun. So I'll go to the same place. And it's just these things that I see them once a week, you know, or every, and it's these people that just sort of mean something, and they add so much colour to our lives.
Yeah. It's good for our mental well-being.
Yes,
you know, to be out, to be with people, and sometimes it's not even about actually, you know, meeting someone. It's about just being around other people. So being a space where it's busy. So, you know, sort of pre-COVID times, you know, Starbucks is quite a busy place, but you see lots of people working in there. You see students studying in there. Mm-hmm. See people just having a coffee and reading, browsing on their phones, whatever, not because you actually are going to meet another person, but you can be by yourself but be with other people.
Exactly. I long for it. Do you know, when you just even talking about it, it's just a wonderful idea. So thinking about the kind of, particularly in the past, I suppose, 6 months, or I mean, it's really accelerated in the past a couple of weeks. I'm just thinking about the big names on our high streets that are kind of going out of business and are being bought up. I wonder, have you got any thoughts about what's happening there in terms of these larger retailers? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, particularly about Arcadia Group, about actually they weren't quick enough to keep up with what consumers are wanting. They were slow in the uptake. Their stores weren't feeling, I suppose Oxford Street was still a destination, but they weren't investing in that experience in store or in their collections. I just wondered if you had any comment about how much of this is down to a business decisions and actually and consumers' trends. Like, what is there a balance there about?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bit of COVID was the straw that, you know, sort of just sort of, it was just too much. So I think that's to a certain extent. I think, you know, consumers have changed because we're people, so we do change over times. You know, like our high streets don't look like they're from the 1950s. You know, precisely because, you know, we have kind of we have changed. You know, we shop in a different way, we work in a different way, we live in a different way. So consumers are always going to change. Our need for different products. You know, just look at the sales of loungewear.
Tops.
Because we're all on Zoom. you know, you look smart on top. You might not look quite so smart on, where you're wearing, you know, your flowery, you know, comfortable trousers or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, consumers have changed. Consumers will continue to change. And, you know, part of the role of the retailer is to look ahead and think, you know, well, what is going to happen in 5, 10, 15, 20 years? As a retailer, are we prepared for those consumer trends? You know, some trends will like rise up from nowhere and you're like, okay, that was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
But your job of a retailer is to be understanding, you know, and you know, what are these subtle changes? You know, what are the subtle changes that are starting to predict how people might behave.
Mm.
You know, it's very hard for any large organization to turn themselves around. It is really difficult. I think, you know, the problem with department stores is, you know, very, very large stores, so very large square footage, all of that space needs to be performing and needs to be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
You've then sort of got the online, so people are shopping online, they're coming into click and collect, they're not necessarily trying clothes on, you know, they're having a look at the clothes in store because they're then going to buy them online.
Yeah.
So you can try them on in the comfort of your own home.
Yeah.
So you've got all of those trends colliding, and I think I don't feel that department stores are, you know, have declined specifically because of COVID. I think, you know, they're finding it difficult to, you know, get that sort of centrality of space in what is quite a crowded kind of market.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ones that do well, sort of your Harvey Nichols, your Selfridges, they've got limited stores. So
Yes. They're
not trying to fulfill, you know, they're not trying to support stores that are performing badly because there's not that many of them. But also as well, they've got a bit of a niche.
Yes.
You know, why would I go to Harvey Nichols? Well, you know, because it's very designer led, etc. It's also highly experiential as well.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. One in Birmingham's incredible.
Yeah.
It's an incredible space. It's an incredibly well designed space. So, you know, I think it was really difficult for them. And I think, you know, things are moving on. So if we look as of this week, Amazon Go has opened in Ealing in London, which I can't wait to go to.
Can you tell us a bit about Amazon Go? Like, what, if for those who don't know, what is that?
Amazon Go. So it's called just walkout technology. So essentially, you go into the store, you scan your Amazon. So before you go into the store, you have an app. You scan your app to enter the store.
Mm.
You go into the store, you have your bag, and you literally pick things off the shelves and you put them in your bag, and you walk out again. So there's no queues. You know, one of the things people don't tend to like is queuing. Yeah. It's quite boring, isn't it? Stood there. Customers tend to get a bit frustrated sort of in those types of queues. And obviously the queue that you're not in always moves faster.
Yeah.
I mean, you always pick the wrong queue, don't you? So, you know, we are seeing innovation. So it's not that, you know, stores are not successful. It's the right type of store. And I think, you know, okay, so Debenhams might go, but we might see, you know, might exit. Well, we'll exit. And then what we might see is Amazon Go in its place. I don't think stores will go completely because, you know, it's the experience. And
it is. And just thinking about, I mean, I'm not to dwell on Debenhams, but I'm just thinking that it's the sheer volume of space that they take up. Mm-hmm. And actually often the real flagships of major shopping developments, they tend to have, I'm just thinking, because we're in Scotland, I'm thinking Dundee and Edinburgh, both of them, actually Glasgow as well, are massive sites. And in Dundee, it's a whole corner of the Overgate shopping centre, and that is, you enter through Debenhams. What will become of their stores, do you think? Do you think they'll be sort of split up almost and used? Because it seems like an awful lot of space for someone to take on.
Yeah, and it's the same in Birmingham. I mean, yeah. Debenhams is a massive wing of the Bullring, yeah. and the main shopping centre is four floors. It's an enormous space. Mm. I think there might be some kind of disruption there, that you might see four individual stores rather okay. than necessarily one yeah. big one. But it's different types of stores, isn't it? So if we look at Apple, you know, Apple stores actually are often quite large spaces, but they tend to perform quite well. But they have the added, you know, excitement, don't they? You know, there's always a new iPad or a new laptop or a new phone. And, you know, it's a very high, you know, Apple store is very highly experiential, where you can go and play, you know, unlike, you know, the old days of mobile phones where you got like a plastic version, you could just kind of see, you know, yeah. you get this sort of, you know, playful kind of sense. And, you know, they've got people on hand to help you. You know, if yes. you're worried about the technology or if something's gone wrong, you can book in a slot or you can go in with your device and you can attend a class where they'll teach you more about your device or more about the particular types of software and things. So
all
I think
added value, isn't it? It's all the stuff you can't get online, but you need to have, and it just enhances the experience all the more with a workshop or speaking to a human.
Yeah, to people, revolutionary these days, isn't it?
I know. Are we going to see more of that then in terms of, you mentioned experiential retail already starting to be a bit of a trend, but is that really if retailers thinking about adding value in their stores and becoming adding and not even buying things being the focus anymore, actually about buying into the whole brand, that you're actually experiencing something by walking through those doors?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what we're looking for, something that's quite immersive and different strands to that brand as well. So different elements. Mm. So whether it's about the fact that there's a cafe in there, or there's a nail bar, or there's, you know, whatever there is, or there's a, you know, homeware design service. I think it's that there needs to be a purpose to go to stores, and a product is no longer enough. There's some stores that will, I mean, there's always exceptions to every rule and some stores. So Primark does quite well, but Primark doesn't sell online. So you've got a reason to go to the store because it doesn't have an online offering. Their online offering only tells you what might be in store, and it's Primark. So you don't even know if it will be there.
So, an interesting choice that they've made there, that they've invested in stores and not online. And it's still throughout the whole year, regardless of they're not, you know, not allowed through their doors, they're still sticking stock. Is that an interesting, I suppose that's a key, like a decision that they've taken as a business to do that? Which feels quite unique, actually. I don't think this TK Maxx weren't online for a while either, but they since have. But
they are, and TK Maxx, it's sort of that, you know, sort of it's the thrill of the purchase, isn't it? And kind of and I sort of put Apple in that, isn't it? It's the kind of thrill of the new phone. Oh, I've got my new phone. I'm walking out with it. And it's all set up and it all works. It's like, oh, it's so exciting. Primark is a bit the same. Well, you know, I mean, obviously the sustainability issues with fast fashion, but leaving that to one side, you know, it's coming out with an enormous bag and going, wow, I spent £50 and I've got, you know, like 100 items or something, you know. Yeah. There's that kind of sort of, you know, sort of thrill of getting the products. And TK Maxx is a bit like that. It's a thrill of finding the bargain, isn't it? So it's that sort of emotional aspect of shopping. And I think we're seeing those stores that have that emotional thrill. There's not quite as much as an emotional excitement as buying a packet of pillowcases from Debenhams.
Well, quite. I know.
Quite as an excitement.
The hideous lighting as well they have. Oh, gosh. I can't. So are there some sectors of retail that are weathering the storm better than others? Or are there some that kind of are ready to adapt more quickly? Or are you seeing differences in the sector?
Yeah, I mean, obviously food retail, fairly kind of anything proof. But I mean, there's always disruption in any sector. You know, I mean, if you dial back sort of 20 years ago when Aldi and Lidl and things started coming in the scene, obviously that started to disrupt the sector. So there's always disruption. But obviously food is kind of pretty kind of anything proof because, you know, we all have to eat. I think, you know, what we're seeing is we're seeing different trends. So it's not particularly sectors as such. It's kind of trends within sectors. So if we look at clothing, you know, work clothing plummeted, loungewear off like a rocket. So you see like brands like Hush have done really well because they were sort of like loungewear kind of clothing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's I think it's a bit more nuanced rather than just looking at broad kind of sectors. Obviously, things like technologies for working from home,
yes.
So we need things like headsets and microphones, don't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of work from home and kind of things like that. So I think it's more nuanced perhaps than it used to be in the past.
And so, how much of this then? You know, we're obviously all at home at the moment. The slightly different roadmaps in England and Scotland differ slightly. Our non-essential retail opened on the 20th, well, if all going well, 26th of April, it looks like, and in England, looking like the 12th of April, slightly earlier. So when we open up, are you expecting there to be this pent-up demand? Are we going to see a huge surge in people really wanting get back to the shops? I suppose there's an element, I guess, of consumer confidence, obviously, because of the recession that we're going to be in, but also confidence in terms of our health and feeling how safe do we feel in these spaces. But do you feel we'll see the bounce back that we so desperately need?
I think there will be an early bounce back because, as well, also things are need based. So, children are going back to school in England. They're going back next week, and children are going back in the other nations, even if there's a staggered start. Mm. So, you know, things like school uniform, school shoes. Often, you want to try school shoes on and things like that. So, I think there'll be an initial surge from, you know, the fact that people have need based, that they want to go out and they need to replace products, or they've identified that they need new products. So I think we'll see an initial surge. Then after that, I think a lot depends what happens when we open up, because of course a lot of retail purchases will be driven by occasions. Oh, I'm going to the wedding, I need a new outfit. Oh, I'm going on holiday, I need holiday clothes. I think a lot will happen, will depend on that as well. So I don't think we'll see things fully going back until possibly 2022, because it's you know, things happen, you know, sort of occasion based as well. So I think we're still in for a bit of a difficult time. And I think, and a lot of things, you know, depend on sort of, you know, what government instructions we get. So, I mean, a really simple example of this is obviously we wear face masks at the moment. So if we wear face masks, we don't tend to wear lipstick. But what we have seen is we've seen a rocket in the sales of mascara and eyeliner, because, you know,
playing up those eyes.
Exactly. But if the government say, well, actually wearing face masks is not mandatory anymore, of course some consumers will still want to wear face masks, and a lot will depend on your job role. It will depend on your own health wise. But also some consumers will be throwing off the face masks and putting the lipstick back on. So then we'll see a rise in lipstick. So I think a lot of it does depend really on what else happens around. And I think can't separate retail out from sort of, you know, societal changes, societal developments and societal needs, that the two are really intertwined.
Yeah. It's so fascinating to think about our responses, and it's a very emotional feeling as well, I think, about our connection with our purchases, because I've been reading about how there could be a surge in smart wear in terms of people wanting to buy suits and desperately feeling like they want to actually, God, I'm sick of putting on these bloody joggers on again. Like, and I just find that so interesting that it is about, it's a very emotional connection we have to these things as well, and how they make us feel.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, what we wear is really tied to our self-identity and our self-expression. And I think that's it. You know, I'm looking at some of the stuff and thinking, oh, I'm not going outside in that. You know, and it's you know, like when I'm teaching, you know, I'm sat down teaching, which is sort of quite a different experience to normally when I'd be in a class, which is obviously quite kind of active. And I have a sort of bit of my wardrobe which is sort of my teaching wardrobe, and a bit that's my meeting wardrobe, and obviously I'm in the meeting wardrobe tending to be at the moment. But you know, we sort of use what we're wearing to match our personas. So you know, like if I'm teaching, you know, I do want to wear things that I think, you know, look quite smart, they look very, very, you know, kind of professional. I'd want to convey that image. I wouldn't necessarily wear the same garments when I'm schlepping around Asda, you know. It's not quite the same. And I think there will be that, you know, is that, oh God, I just can't wait to wear something different. You know, I'm going to wear something, you know, and I think people are looking forward to that as well. And when you meet other people, because of course in your own home you're only really going to dress for yourself or your head that's appearing on Zoom. You're dressing for. But you know, even if we can get six people round, you know, for a barbecue or something, then you've sort of got, you know, that sort of sense of, you know, what I might wear. And of course, I mean, there was some data out this week on sort of savings as well. That have been accrued over this year. Now, of course, you know, recession and things look quite on the horizon at the moment. Yes. But, you know, I think a proportion of that, some consumers will want to spend. That was, again, obviously it depends on kind of job role, security of job and things like that. But there will be some of those savings that people want to spend. You know, we've seen, you know, sort of investment in our homes. We've seen a lot of significant spendings there because people have been sat in their homes all the time and they're like, do you know what, I should probably replace that sofa, chair, table. You know, I should, you know, have, I need a new bathroom or something like that. Because people have been in their homes. So yeah, I think there certainly will be an initial bounce.
Oh, that's, I mean, it's good to hear about, isn't it? I think it's just, I feel like I'm living in my head at the moment, just the dream world of wishing about all the things like you were talking about with your daughter, but all the things we could do. It's going to be wonderful. And so, yeah, I guess thinking about this, about when we're back then and in a sort of in a better, more upbeat time and thinking about our future of retail and things, I just want to pick up on some of the things you said about community and actually what this means to us. It's more than just buying things. It's actually the shopkeepers we know. It's about, you know, the baristas who make our coffee. And thinking about, you know, Mid-Steeple Quarter, who's a, for those of you who haven't heard so far, it's a, listen back to our first series episode of the series. And we spoke to Scott, who's project manager of Mid-Steeple Quarter, who is leading a community buyback scheme of key sites on the high street. And this is the first of its kind in the UK, but I think they very much want to be a blueprint for other towns like it. And I wonder whether, are we going to see a move towards wanting to see more distinctiveness on our high streets? And is there something about us losing, I don't know, are we falling out of love with some of these, maybe Debenhams or Arcadia? Are they intertwined about us wanting to actually support our independents who actually have also kept us going in our smaller kind of local high streets, and us wanting to buy it back, to kind of have a bit more of a stake in our own high streets?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I think working patterns have changed. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, do want to get back to the office, but perhaps not every day. You know, that actually what I want to be is I want to be in the office 3 days a week and at home. And I think we've kind of perhaps fallen in love a little bit with our high streets because, you know, I mean, certainly sort of where I live, it's a bit of a kind of commuter town. So lots of people will go into kind of centre of Birmingham or some of the other towns around. And we do have like a little kind of sort of, it's not quite high street because ours isn't in a isn't in a line, but we have a really nice quasi high street, you know, with lots of little restaurants and kind of things like that. There's a cafe Nero's, big Sainsbury's, etc. And it's a really nice area. And I think, you know, people have almost, you know, by proxy of being forced, you know, with the stay at home and messages and things like that, I think people have kind of sort of discovered their locality. And I think that's a real positive. And I think that's a real opportunity for growth for retailers. So, you know, people will, you know, they'll be working from home and think, okay, well, you know, I've got an hour. Actually, what I'll do is I'll go and have a walk. I'll pick up my coffee from Cafe Nero and I'll pop in and get some dinner or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really positive kind of move. And I think it's interesting. I read something about John Lewis and Waitrose this week, that they're looking at putting a mini John Lewis inside. I think they said every Waitrose. And I thought, well, that would be quite interesting if you can. Because obviously lots of people use kind of click and collect. Mm-hmm. And I think what I could see is perhaps some large brands having kind of mini stores, but much smaller ones, almost as the kind of click and collect. Because that is always the difficult bit. We kind of call that the last mile problem. Is getting stuff that you've ordered online, getting it to your house. That's the big challenge. And obviously the growth of click and collect, Amazon lockers and things like that have been, you know, sort of quite important. Collect Plus and everything in sort of driving there. But yeah, I think I can see us being a bit more in love with our high streets. And I think people do feel quite loyal to their high streets. They do feel, and I think there is an appreciation of kind of, you know, what's kept everybody going. And I think that's, you know,
absolutely
important. And you do build these little mini relationships with people.
Well, you do. Nice. And I think you remember who's been there throughout as well. I think, you know, I remember when lockdown initially hit, I think about 5 days in, I just had, and I only remember that 5 days in only because I remember writing on Instagram day five. And when at that point, we thought, you know, it won't be as many days.
Be like 10 more days. It's all fine.
I remember
here we are a year later.
I know, right? Goodness me. But I remember being so impressed impressed is the only word I can think of, actually, about how retailers were acting, particularly local independent people who were actually just thinking, right, okay, we haven't done delivery before, but okay, how can we do it? How can we set up online? How can we, get people going, keep morale up, keep us all feeling connected? And I feel like we're going to remember the people who brought us through all of this, and we're going to remember the people who...
No, I think so. I would agree with that. I think you do think actually that's actually really, you know, that I want to keep. I think that is true. I mean, I remember like the first time I went into Primark when we were let out last July, I think it was, and we were allowed back in Primark. I was like really impressed with their setup. I was like, oh, this is really good. You've got like the kind of queuing system, and it funnels you past the hand sanitizer, and it's like an auto dispenser. And I can see you're counting people in, counting people out. And I thought, actually, that's really good. And that certainly made me go back and think, actually, this is kind of really good. Where is the brands who've, you know, lost your deliveries and things like that? You might not be quite so keen to go back to.
Well, quite, I know. And I could rant for hours about certain delivery companies, but I shan't. So in terms of then what, thinking about the future, and you've touched upon a few key trends and things that are going to be hot, I guess, kind of hot trends that we're kind of going for. But I think, where are we going? What are our towns going to maybe look like? Or what are the key things that you think we're going to take with us as we kind of come out of COVID and shape retail as we for the next 10, 15 years or longer?
I think technology is the biggest one. That's going to be the biggest changes we're going to increasingly see. And I think increasingly just see technology is just used to facilitate our lives, when we're in retailers. And of course, from the retailer point of view, there's all kind of things, sort of machine learning, you know, using chatbots and kind of things like that. So, but I think as consumers, we'll see technologies just become sort of like almost kind of second nature. So turning apps on as soon as we walk into stores, that's sort of just walk-in technology, you know, like, so the retailer knows who I am as soon as I've walked in.
Wow, really?
So I think we'll see things like that. I mean, I know Amazon Go are sort of, they're sort of just walk-out technology. They're offering that to other retailers. So I can certainly see checkouts, becoming a thing of the past because it's quite process-driven. It's something that consumers particularly don't like. But then you can use your employees to talk to people, to support people, to create experiences, you know. So rather than scanning my wine bottles, you know, tell me, you know, what type of wines might I want to buy. And so I think we'll certainly see technology because we're all becoming a lot more kind of comfortable.
Just on that point then, do you think retailers will really invest much more in their staff in terms of like giving them a lot more and just seeing them less like drones of just like put things through and actually invest in the skills of sure that they can support people better?
Yeah, I think that's a real opportunity for retailers is to focus on that kind of experience and supporting the customer in what they want and what they might want to buy. But I think also, so I think conversely, whilst we see sort of technology becoming so important, I think also as well, and I think it goes back to the community building that we'll have, we'll, we have this need to kind of, you know, have spaces where we can kind of hang out, where we can buy, where, you know, so almost like multi-purpose spaces. So rather than just being retail, just sort of much more multi-purpose. And, you know, you see things like, you know, kind of specialist kind of coffee stores, you know, craft brewers, you know, all those types of things have become quite important, you know, that they might be quite small scale, but actually they're quite important to the communities that they're in because they provide that sort of bespoke kind of offering. And I think the way in which we are going to live our lives in the future, I think that's obviously going to affect how we engage with retail, as I said before, because the two are intertwined. And I think, you know, as we work more from home, as we kind of use our localities, I think homes are going to look quite different because I think we're going to need spaces to kind of work from home and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have read some sort of trends of people wanting to be out of city centres because more space, you know, green space, I think, is important as well. So maybe retailers that have a bit of green space.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well, because I think, you know, again, I think that comes from a sort of mental well-being point of view, is that, you know, I know we're all going for walks and we're all maybe a bit... bit bored going for yet another walk around the same place. I think that has been important to us. So I think, you know, sort of how sort of retail kind of fits into that, I think is going to be important.
Are you excited about the future for retail?
I'm always excited for retail. It's been my life for me. It's been really all my adult life. I spent either working in retail or teaching retail. So I suppose I do love retail. And you know, I'm one of these kind of people who, when they go overseas, I want to go to the supermarket and see what's in it. Oh, where are you? I'm in Mauritius. I'm off to the supermarket. The people are going to sit on the beach. I'm like, oh, what can I buy? I actually genuinely think that was one of the first things I did. So yeah, I am excited. I think because, like I say, I think, you know, there is, if we, you know, if we take a broad look at retail, you know, it is often seen as being frivolous. It's seen as being not important, you know. And I think one of the good things that's come out of the pandemic is, you know, people who work in retail have been, you know, they are essential, you know, workers. Yeah. And, you know, there was a really kind of poor perception, you know, of people who worked in retail. And I think, you know, if you know, what's come out is that actually, you know, without retailers to get the food to us, doesn't matter how, whether that's online, whether that's in store, whether it's, you know, pulling my car up at Sainsbury's and they're going to put the food in my boots so it's no contact, you know, whatever happens, that is actually really important. So I think that appreciation, I think, is good, and I would hope that will last. But I am excited for retail because retail is all about people. And, you know, as people, we want communities, we want to do things, we want to be with other people. Will our high streets look different? Yes. Will our malls look different? Yes. Will we see new brands? Yes. But I think that's all part of the excitement and the discovery.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wonder, when you're talking there, it reminds me of, do you know, after the 2008 crash, there was a bit of a reckoning of some of the brands that we'd lost, brands that actually, I don't know, again, it was a bit of a quickening of things, maybe trends that should have, that were kind of happening anyway. But I was thinking about losing Woolworths, actually. I don't know why this came to my mind. But I was thinking, I wonder whether, because I suppose there will be an element when we, you know, when we get back to the high street at the moment, there's an element of us sort of having to draw breath a little bit because the high street's going to look quite different when we get back. I'm just thinking about even just Princes Street. There's at least four major players who are not going to be there when we start to, you know, visit other shops. So I guess there will be an element of getting used to this, about new brands will emerge, but this change is happening, and change is always difficult sometimes. Well, it is always,
it's painful. It's going to be a pain because there's going to be this sort of interim sort of movement as things kind of change. So like you say, certainly in Birmingham, we've got some sort of glaring omissions. You know, John Lewis closed in the centre of Birmingham. So, I mean, you know, that was a massive, again, four floor store, demolition, you know, so we're all the kind of same, you know, so we are going to see almost like, you know, it's a bit wounded, I think, the high street, you know, it's shopping malls are a little bit wounded.
Yeah.
And it is painful and it is upsetting, but I think things
new buds will
come back over time.
Yeah.
As that consumer demand change. I mean, it is interesting when retailers do go out of business, and you often talk to people, and you say, and we say Woolworths was a good example, wasn't it? When it went out, but it went out of business also because people weren't shopping there as well.
Yes, exactly.
So it is sad, but also as consumers, we have a degree of responsibility.
Yes.
I mean, I know the demise of Woolworths was very complicated, and you know, part of its demise was around the sort of payments to suppliers and things. So there was a sort of a complex element, but also it wasn't particularly booming because as consumers, we'd kind of moved on. So we, you know, it was quite a while ago, wasn't it? So you probably were going to Debenhams. Now it's Debenhams' turn, you know.
Yeah.
So there sort of is this as well. You know, as consumers, we make active, you know, choices to go to people, to not to, you know, go and use our Amazon. You know, we can make an active choice to boycott them. Mm-hmm. We can make an active choice to kind of use them. But I think it will be painful.
Yeah.
I think it's undeniable that it's painful. And of course, for retail employees, that's where obviously the biggest pain point
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a tremendously difficult time. But I think, like you say, there are new buds of things that will emerge, will take time to develop, but there is definitely hope and like you say, new things that are starting up and new ways for us to be. I'm just really interested, just thinking about the independents, because I guess that we've been speaking to a number of independent stores, you know, within Scotland. Thinking about your local area, and actually, this is so that we can add things to our list when we visit Birmingham. Are there any kind of local independents to you, or people that you feel actually, or even large retailers that you've just been really impressed with locally to you, that you think, do you know what, actually, well done?
One of the brands which was new, and we've supported them from their opening, which might say more about me than it says about them, but there's a wine shop called Locky.
Ah.
And they opened in one of the arcades in Birmingham. So we do have some really nice arcades in Birmingham, which tend to have very small independent retailers in, because they're often there's a little bit of a walk to them, but they're really, you know, nice sort of, you know, sort of 1800s kind of buildings. They're quite they're really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
So I think Lucky's great. So it sort of opens. It's a wine store, but what they had is they had this kind of system where you buy like a card and put some money on it, and it's like a little credit card. You put it in a slot, and you could try wines. So you could actually try them.
Oh,
so you know,
yes.
Like you're reading the back of the label, going like, I don't really know what that means. What do you mean to say that, you know, it's a fruit grown in the terroir of, you know, and it's got an earthy flavour? It doesn't mean anything to me, humble customer here, who doesn't have that expertise. So so you could say, I think that's great. So you could try. And again, it's an experience. So we you know, myself and my husband, we'd often kind of go there and you'd try, like, you know, just like a little, you know, couple, you know, try a few different ones, then of course then you buy them, and then we'd got to know them as well, so then we'd go in, and so we knew who they were, so then it became like, oh, well, we'd always go, you know, when it was one of our anniversaries or something, we then buy, you know, a nice bottle of wine from there. When it was my husband's 40th birthday, I spent like the most money I've ever spent on wine in my entire life. I was like, how much? And does it walk home as well? Does it sing and dance, this bottle? But, you know, so you start to build up that sort of relationship, and it's meaningful, you know. So you, and, you know, obviously I wanted some expert advice as to kind of what to buy. And so they've expanded. They've got a couple of new shops, etc. And they do, and again, you know, because obviously you couldn't go into store and try, they do local deliveries, and then they have in non-COVID times they have tasting sessions and things like that. They do online tasting sessions. So I think they've just adapted really well, and I think as well, again, it's that personal, isn't it, that you've known someone from when they started, so you're like willing people to succeed, like you really want it, because we become invested and we have these relationships. So I think so places like Locky, I think, are
I love that.
They've just been great.
Highly
recommend
things. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll add that to the list.
Just open one round the corner from me. they've opened a couple of others, but I'm just waiting for one to be on ours. So that would be gratefully appreciated. I'd spend a lot of time in there.
I love that. And I think, like you say, I think that's a really lovely point note to end on, in terms of, you know, our pound in our pocket is a vote, I guess, in terms of who we want to support and who we stand by. And I think it's really important that we like you say, we all have the power to shape our high streets in terms of who we shop with, I think what the street will look like at the end of all this, but also in the next kind of 10 or 15 years. So yeah, I think that's a really, you've certainly given me a lot of hope. I think there's a lot of really interesting, I'm always hopeful, again, love retail as well, but I think there's a lot of really interesting trends that will emerge and new things that will start, and it will be difficult, but actually I think the future looks really bright for town centres, actually. Not as bleak as people are saying, certainly.
No, I think there's definitely hope there, definitely.
Oh, well, wonderful. And on that note, it's such a pleasure to speak to you today, Sarah. Thank you so much for your time. It's just fantastic to hear this really interesting analysis of what's going on from the past, but also kind of where we're going. So thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please consider rating the show, writing a review, or telling a friend. It really helps us to be discovered by other like-minded listeners. Thanks for listening. Bye for now. Thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did and you want to support me to continue to make the show, I would love it if you became a patron by clicking the link in the show notes. From as little as the price of a coffee a month, you'll receive behind the scenes content, blog posts and lots more. Click the link in the show notes to find out more or head to patreon.com/independentthinking. Bye for now.